there's a book that's written without the letter E, which sounds really hard to do. And then there's a pragmatic lipogram, which is text that uses every letter of the alphabet except one. For example, the quick brown fox jumped over the lazy dog, which is a takeoff on, it's just removing S from the quick brown fox jumped over the lazy dogs, which is a sentence that uses every letter once. And it's often, you know what that's often used for? You ever seen that?
No.
It's often used for examples of fonts, like when you're looking for fonts. Like if you go into Windows in the fonts to look at the different font possibilities that are on your computer, or if you want to download more fonts and you go onto a font site, they'll usually have that set in each font so you can see how it looks, you know, in each font.
Cool.
Yep. So that's a lipogram. Then there's, let's see. Oh, I want to try doing something, and this is how it came up. So I've been mastering with different techniques and learning a lot about mastering. And mastering is a whole, it's hard to explain people what it is. It's kind of mixing the record after it's mixed. But whereas when you're mixing it, you're taking 16 or 32 or 35 tracks and mixing them down to two stereo tracks. Mastering is taking that two stereo track wave file and then applying different things to that to make it really pop. And it's kind of the difference between a really good record and a great record. Like, a lot of times people spend a lot of money, go into a recording studio, make a CD, you know, they play or make a file, they make it in the studio and on the big studio monitors, it sounds amazing. And then they bring it home and they play it. And it's like, it doesn't sound like other records. You know, it doesn't sound like the music they love. Like the music does, but it's not as loud. It's not as present. And, mastering is adding, you know, intelligently adding volume, compression, EQ, leveling, limiting, bunch of basically mostly stuff involving the amount of various frequencies to get it as loud as possible without being distorted and still having some dynamics, which is, it's a trick. It's kind of like pulling a rabbit out of a hat. And it's a job to the point where there are people who all they do is master. Like, you know, Google Howie Weinstein, mastering engineer. My friend Warren Huart did an interview with him recently. I mean, this guy, you know, mastered everything going back to, like, you know, rancid punk rock, going all the way back to like disco, going all the way back to rock and roll. Like records you probably have are mastered by Howie Weinberg. And he has, you know, 50 gold records on his wall because the person mastering gets a gold record too if it sells a lot. So he, you know, like it's a very well paid position if you're good at it. And it doesn't require as much equipment as a full recording studio. It's usually like three or four components, but it's really just having the right ears. And so I'm learning to do that. There's a few different programs I use. Ozone is one. Lursen Mastering Console is another. Then I use SoundForge just for in and out of adding little volume raises and lowerings here after it's all done. I use an online service called Lander. I kind of use combinations of all these too. And so the new record, that's one of the reasons it has a lot of bit, you know, a good bass and a good high end, whereas the other ones were just kind of mid. But it also kind of can, it's really easy to wreck it. It's really easy to make it too crunchy. Like that song, the instrumental song called the San Francisco, the Chautauqua Synthesizer Ensemble Tuning in the Amphitheater, right. July 1977, right. Which that ensemble doesn't exist, but they should have. And if they did, they would have sounded like that. And what that actually is, I didn't even put this in the notes because I didn't have time, but I'll say it. This will be the notes. So when I made Shiny Dirt and Lucky Worm, I also made a YouTube video of each one. Did you see the YouTube videos of the sound run through for them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so people can go, I mean, there's nothing in the video except like the name of the setting and then the sound for 10 seconds. And that really helps people to know whether they want to bother downloading a free synthesizer of like, let's see what it sounds like without actually having to download and install it. So, you know, I did a run through of like 30 of the 128 presets, and I saved the file that I did that with. So what you're hearing in that synthesizer ensemble song is all of those little 10 or 20 second parts played at once.
Oh, cool.
But they're spread out. Like I tried them just all at the same time, and it was 10 seconds long, and it was just a wall of noise. So I moved them around a little bit. So there's three or four at a time fading into the next one. And that's what that is. And then added some drums. And nice. Yeah, so that song, more than all of them, like that one really sounded crunched. Over-crunched to me by the mastering. So I went back and fixed that and then fixed the volumes on a few other ones. And now it sounds natural, you know, but it sounded like kind of a, not horrible, but a, like if as if you were in the amphitheater and recorded it with a little cassette player, you just with microphones. So which actually, like, I was going to say, well, it sounds like it really would sound if you record, but no, that's an excuse. So, but another thing I'm dealing with a lot more on this album is sibilance. So constrained writing. Yeah. What about it?
Hey, well, hey. we've been doing some of this stuff and we didn't even realize it. And there's actually a name for our cut up process. It's called aleatory, A-L-E-A-T-O-R-Y, aleatory. And the definition is where the reader supplies random input.
Yeah. So, I actually saw that and thought about it. Yeah, our cut up, the software, the website you're talking about, right?
Yeah.
That I made?
Yeah.
It's aleatory. Depends on the throwing of, well, aleatory doesn't just refer to writing. It's anything that depends on the throw of dice or chance, random, or relating to or denoting music or other forms of art involving elements of random choice. Brian Eno does that too. He has a form of that. He uses cards, like a playing deck he and a friend made up. You know about that?
No, never heard about that.
Yeah, it's called Oblique Strategies. And, you know, some people have said it's like kind of a scam, like, oh, the Emperor's New Clothes. You know, he invented this thing that's just not that interesting. But he's made some really compelling music that's influenced everybody, including us, a lot. You like Eno, right? Strategies. Oblique. Peter Schmidt. He made it with this guy called Peter Schmidt. Maybe he didn't. Yeah, he created by. So it's published in 1975. Physically, it takes the form of a deck of 2.8-inch by 3.5-inch playing card, printed cards in a black box. Each card involves challenging constraints intended to help artists, particularly musicians, break creative blocks by encouraging lateral thinking. Yeah, like, okay, here are some of the cards. Like, one says, use an old idea. Another says,
I've seen stuff like that.
State the problem in words as clearly as possible. Actually, these could be used for any kind of problem solving, but okay, here's another one. Only one element of each kind. One says, what would your closest friend do? One says, what to increase, what to reduce? One says, are there sections? Consider transitions. I do most of these anyway. One is, try faking it. And then says, I do this one too. Honor thy error as hidden intention. I like that.
Ooh, I like that.
And yeah. Ask your body is one, and work at a different speed. I like this a lot. Yeah, yeah. Withdrawing in disgust is not the same thing as apathy. That one's one of them. That one's one of them, and that's mentioned in the REM song, What's the Frequency, Kenneth? Which was the one about, what's his name, getting punched. Remember that?
I never knew the story behind it.
Dan Rather. So somebody walked up to Dan Rather in 1986. Dan Rather was walking near his apartment in Manhattan, and he was punched from behind by a man who punched him and then said, Kenneth, what is the frequency? And ran off. And like, you know, and then the other guy with the guy beat the tar out of him, and they didn't take money or anything. They just beat him up and said, what's the frequency, Kenneth?
Bizarre. Weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I guess the point of there's several points of constrained writing, and I am liking this as a working concept and name for the record. I think we should call it Let's Talk About Constrained Thought, because you said in the other show, we used one of these shows in the record, in our new record, User's Manual for the Common Worm. No, Fanfare for the Common Worm. Guns and Worms, The Road to Freedom. No. So Fanfare for the Common Worm. We used a part where you said, let's talk about synthetic thought. And then you wrote a poem later about it called On Synthetic Thought. But I called the song Let's Talk About Synthetic Thought, which I kind of like. And it actually fits a form of controlled writing, because there's a form of controlled writing called controlled natural languages. For instance, ASD Simplified Technical English, Caterpillar Technical English, IBM's Easy English, which are like forms used in writing technical manuals by corporations. And they started doing this in the 60s, and it's kind of neat. I worked as a writer, basically writing technical books, but I wrote them in my voice, which was the selling point of a lot of them. Like, if you go read the reviews of $30 Film School, which sold 110,000 copies at $30 each, if you go read the reviews of that on Amazon, it's like, you know, half of them are basically like, this isn't like some dry tech book. It's like having a friend sitting next to you explaining it. You know, so I do not write in controlled natural language, but couple of the rules in most controlled natural technical languages, which are forms of constrained writing, are keep sentences short, avoid the use of pronouns, use only dictionary-approved words, and this one, use only the active voice. So let's talk about constrained thought, or let's talk about constrained language, is active voice, whereas unconstrained thought wouldn't be. So I think we should do that because it kind of like sounds like an action item. Although I think it might turn people off. Like, what is this? Like a spoken lesson on English? I don't want to hear this. But, you know, at this point, we have an audience, so people will listen to whatever the latest BipTunia thing is. But, yeah, so I do think I do think that constraints can, you know, I think that's one reason that music was better, a lot of the ways, a lot of music was better back in the day. And a lot of it, but you also missed a lot of gems that you'd have now, because when anyone can make a record now, anyone does. And the cost of the cost of entry to making music is basically reached zero, or I would say $30. Like that $30 little keyboard I sent you, that and some free software and a computer. And everyone has a computer now, pretty much, in the Western world at least. You know, it's you could do it for free. I mean, if you have that little keyboard and probably my $5 book, $30 music school, second edition, $5 cheaper than a drink in a bar. But there, like, you have unlimited opportunities now, and you have unlimited levels of undo, and you have unlimited choices. I mean, I remember that first thing where I wanted to use a synthesizer in 1983 and couldn't afford. I mean, it was $4,000 for a synthesizer, which is like $15,000 now. I couldn't afford that. I was a starving college student, you know, but I went into a music store and recorded one and did the rock and roll swindle and lied and said, my dad wants to buy me one, but he wants a recording of it first. And the guy's like,
I love that.
Yeah,
that's such a great story.
I know. And I don't consider that fraud, because I actually asked my dad to buy it and sent him the tape, but he wouldn't buy it. He couldn't afford it either. But he bought one of the first pocket calculators, which was a little big for a pocket, and it plugged into the wall, and it was $700, which was, you know, $2,100. Wow. But there was a tax write off, and he used it for his business. But it was cool. It was like in 74, 73, we had a calculator, which was not common then. But, so back then, like, I couldn't even get a synthesizer. Now, sometimes when I'm bored, I download synthesizers, or I make them, you know, software versions. And it's like, you can download a software emulation of that ARP 2600 that I played in the music store that I couldn't afford. Like, I can download that right now and get all the same sounds of it in a way that nobody could tell the difference. I mean, there's people who claim, there's a lot of gear geeks out there. They're more interested in gear than sound, and they go into debt, and like their wives leave them, and their children, you know, they buy synthesizers before they buy shoes for their children. I think some of them, there's actually a joke of that on the cover of my second edition of $30 Film School. I found a picture of a bum begging, sitting in the dirt on a street corner, and I kind of obscured his face. I used the Captain Dr. Spock's glasses from Star Trek, and obscured his eyes, so you can't see who it is. But it says, he was holding a sign that said, need money for beer. And I changed it to, why lie, need money for a module, you know, a synthesizer module. But he's homeless. And I put a bunch of synthesizers next to him, which I believe there are people like this. And like, these are the people that yell at me and say I'm stupid because I'm using, you know, inexpensive software. But I've made 7 great records with you in a year. And these people have a couple 45-minute pot smoking jams on SoundCloud that like no one listens to that aren't very listenable. So yeah, it's all about the music, not about what you make it with. But yeah, man. So constraints, like, and I think one of the reasons I'm so efficient with making good music is because I made music back in the day when it was difficult. I made music when you couldn't record for free in your apartment and take as long as you wanted to do it in your bedroom, where like, you had to write a song, you had to get together with some guys, you had to write a bunch of songs, you had to rehearse them until they were really good. And then either you had to pay money to go in a studio and record it, or you had to be good enough that someone else would do it. And I did a lot of both. And, we made the first Beef People record, was recorded and mixed in a day. It cost $450, including tape rental. We didn't even buy the tape. To make that. And it was like, it's an EP. It's about 20 minutes long and it's amazing, but we were really tight. Now, like, you know, the band would start recording it before they wrote the songs, which is also another way to do it. But because I could do both, because I had the constraints, I've become really good at workflow once I have unlimited possibilities. Yeah.
Nice.
So constrained writing. So the Lipogram, the reason this came up was because dealing with... Oh, this is what I forgot. So dealing with the interesting challenges of actually mastering a record and learning to do it while I'm doing it, they were coming out sounding great, but they had sibilance, which sibilance is an accentuation on S sounds, like tsst. I got really close to the mic to exaggerate it. It probably hurt your ears, but probably not that much because talk radio goes through a lot of compression and noise, you know, like basically makes it sound like a brick. So things like that probably don't hurt as much, but it's there. That's not a good treatment for music. It would make music sound rough and boxy. So it's quite a bit of work to get rid of the sibilance that you get when you add the high end. That's not there because of you need high end. Adding the high end raises the sibilance, and I had to learn a lot about this. Like, first of all, I had to download and use like some oscilloscopes basically to see what frequency our sibilance is at. And it's actually different with you and I and Kip. Our sibilance is all in a different range. Like yours is 4,000, 5,000 hertz. Mine is 7,000 to 8,000 hertz. Kip's is like 12,000 to 14,000 hertz. And I actually like analyzed the vocals by themselves in a program that gives me a spectrogram, you know, like a visual representation. I could see up there on, and I would just take one syllable with an S and then another syllable without an S and see which has the little rise in it and see where it is. So that would allow me to go in on each track and reduce that frequency using dynamic compression, which is a whole different thing. And now actually after the record's done, I found a plugin that deals with sibilance a lot better than what I was doing. So next record, it won't be as much of a problem, but I actually said, let's write a song with no sibilance in them. Let's write poems that don't have, and it's not just S's. There's other sounds, CH sound, Z sounds. The worst though is S at the beginning of a word, like sibilance. Sibilance. There's two sibilants in that. What I ended up doing was going through and this took me like a day, like a 12-hour day. I went through,
yeah, I remember.
I made copies of all of our vocal tracks, just the vocals alone. And I went through painstakingly and just listened to them, hit stop, listened to them, hit stop, and found every sibilant, highlighted it in my editing program, and reduced the volume on it by 50%. Sometimes I had to reduce it by 80%. Sometimes I only had to reduce it by 20%. It was either 20, 50, or 80. And with most of them, it was 50. But with like a really heavy S, it'd be an 80. But more than that, like, you know, you end up, it sounds weird because you can hear the audio dip down. But at 50%, you can't. And it's because the S's are louder, actually. They show up bigger, the wider waves. But then I would do things like on some of them, I would do the whole S sound 50%. And then after that, just the middle of it where it's the loudest, to bring that down 30%. I mean, this was painstaking. And I'm really quick at it. It took me about 12 hours. And then I went through and applied dynamic EQ and figured out the right amount of decibels to reduce it by, the right ratio of compression, dynamic compression only in those ranges. And it's a different range on each person, on you, me, and Kip. So I did all that and then it kind of worked. So, but I thought it'd be fun. I don't want to constrain us to a whole record of that, but I think we should do a song, you know, called like The Eternal Lipogram or something where, you know, there's none of those sounds and it's like S, C, H, T sounds and TH, especially theory, that has a sibilant. D has a little bit. Z, T, S. P has plosives, P and B and D. But those are a lot easier to deal with. Those you can just bring down a little bit. We've gotten to the point where we really don't have that much of them. And when you do, that's really easy to deal with. All you have to do is just bring that down a little bit. You don't have to do the EQ after. But yeah, man, human language is a complex thing, and it didn't evolve around, you know, editing in a computer. So you have to adapt the computer to the vocals. So we're going to write a song called, I think, The Eternal Lipogram, or The Lipogram, let's see, what's it called when you're, oh, how about The Lipogram Laureate of Maine? You like that?
That works. Sure. Yeah.
But the record, working title of the record, maybe this should be the working title of the show too, or the title of this episode is, Let's Talk About Constrained Language.
I dig it.
What else you got about constrained language?
Not much, really. That was about it. I was really excited when I found aleatory. It's always funny when you find there's a name for something that you've been doing for years and just didn't realize. And it lends some kind of weird legitimacy to the whole thing. I don't know.
Or at least tie it into academia, which academia has a bad name. But... you know, it's real.
Yeah.
Yeah. Academia has a bad name because it has become what it was supposed to be against. You know, in the 60s, it was like academia was the cutting edge of free speech. Berkeley was the cutting edge of free speech. And now academia is like, I mean, there are language police in colleges. There are language rules and laws in colleges. So it's kind of a full circle thing. But yeah, which I like the double entendre of calling it, let's talk about constrained language. And I'll probably write a song that you're not on because you're in academia. I'll write a song that's about free speech.
All right, and I'll write a song about constrained academic speech.
Oh, well, there you go. You're the inside.
We'll play off each other.
Inside track here. I'm psyched. I wasn't even thinking about the next record yet, but I guess I am now because we'll probably use some of this, probably some of this conversation about constrained thought in the song. Here, let's both say it well and I can use it. Let's talk about constrained thought. No, it's language. Let's talk. Hang on. Let's talk about constrained language. Okay, now you do it.
Hey, let's talk about constrained language.
I think there's a little bit of a plosive on the T. Back off a little bit.
Okay. Let's talk about constrained language.
I like it. Oh, G too. Cool. That has a sibilant in it.
Want me to do it again?
No, that was good. I'm just saying, like, that's one of the, you know, I was trying to think of all the sibilants. There's so many of them.
Right.
Yeah. But it's going to be tough. There's actually a Simpsons that's a takeoff on a lipogram. There's a, there's one where, this is really strange, it's where somebody gets called into Mr. Burns' office, and Mr. Burns is looking to fire people because he needs to save money or something. You know, he needs to fire some of the safety officers at the nuclear power plant.
Right.
And I think it's Lenny. Lenny's standing in front of his desk and he says, so Lenny, tell me why I should not fire you and tell me without using the letter E. And Lenny says, okay, I'm a good work guy. And Mr. Burns says, you're fired. And he says, but I didn't use the letter E. And he says, you will. And Mr. Burns presses this button under his desk and a trap door opens up under Lenny and he falls going, ee!
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Yeah. Yep. Part out of it. But the really complicated thing is that, you know, in 5 years, all those jobs are going to be replaced by robots. The other day I was like, dealing with this inept phlebotomist who was stabbing me and hurting me. And I said, let's get your boss to do this. Let's get the more senior person. He's like, no, I can do it. And he kept stabbing me. And I really wanted to say, he finally got his boss. And I really wanted to say, like, you know, in 5 years, you're going to be replaced by a robot. Oh. Yep. I, for one, welcome our robot overlords, sort of. Not
you
really.
You do.
Not overlords.
I didn't think so.
Servants. But it's going to be tough, man, for people that, you know, all they can do is physical jobs because that's going to be gone, man. But you know what? It'll bring manufacturing back to America. There just won't be many Americans controlling the robots. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of that kind of stuff, there's this place, I won't say the real name, but there's this place in Bar Harbor, which is about 25 miles away here, that's expanding. They actually were given the old Lowe's in Ellsworth for like a penny.
What? By who? The state?
Yeah. The city, Lowe's. I guess, or whoever. Yeah,
whoever took it for tax purposes, unpaid taxes or something.
It's a thing they do. And I just saw in the news today that they had their grand opening, and it's all about genetic research. And they do stuff that I had a friend that worked there, and he was telling me all kinds of weird things. But their big thing now is mice. So they're raising like millions, literally millions of mice for their other brands,
nefarious plans
to experiment on. Yeah, it's pretty wild stuff. Like they grow ears on the side of mice because they can.
That's old.
And that happened apparently, yeah. Apparently,
they're way past that.
Glow in the dark, man. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, but nobody really knows what they do. I mean, there's certain, you know, only
there was a there was. Really. I remember the glow in the dark cat thing. There was they made a.
Never knew that.
There was a. Was it glow-in-the-dark cats or was it anti-allergy cats? There was a glow-in-the-dark cat. There was an old thing on Saturday Night Live. Like, that was a news piece in, I don't know, 1989 or something. There was a Saturday Night Live skit where they would read actual headlines and then make jokes about them. And the actual headline was, today, scientists in Zurich released gave a press conference saying that they had created a cat with hair that glows in the dark. Cats everywhere responded with, leave me alone. Yep. And that's kind of a running joke with my wife and I when the cats are just, you know, don't touch me. You know, sometimes they'll come to you and just like rub all over you and you have, they're like, please pet me, pet me. And then sometimes you walk up to them and pet me, whereas a dog is always wants to be petted, but a cat's like, don't touch me.
Oh man, my cat runs away when she's not, you know, initiating it. She like runs and like, it's like the cartoon where somebody's running really fast, but they're just like staying in place.
His feet are
That's what she does, man. Yeah, oh, cause she goes sideways.
You don't have rugs? Because you got...
No.
I don't either. Yeah, our cats do that.
Flying.
Our cats, it's funny we to took watch. Out all the rugs when I got sick because they make it a lot harder to keep a house dust-free. And I like it. At first, I didn't like it because it made things kind of echoey, but then I put some rugs on the wall and I vacuumed those with a mask on. Right. But yeah, it's they... So our house is basically a big circle. The upstairs is living room, goes to the dining room, goes to the kitchen, goes to the hallway, goes to a back to the living room, and it's a big circle. And then there's two bedrooms off of it, and then there's a downstairs and a garage. But they run in circles around the circle of, like, you know, the wall between the kitchen and the living room, and they don't take corners that well. Sometimes they'll, they'll slide like a race car having an accident.
Yeah. I mean,
they never get hurt, but it's kind of comical to watch them just like slip and bump into each other.
I've seen one of our cats hit the wall doing that.
NASCAR kitties.
Totally,
You know, sometimes in Wyoming, we get preempted in Wyoming on the radio for NASCAR or rodeo. Otherwise, we're on air.
Right.
But yeah.
Well, it's a big thing, man.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
I like it. I like rodeo. Been to a rodeo.
I've been to the one back home in Gary. That's a pretty famous one on the circuit. We used to go to State Line Speedway, man, every Saturday with the clients when I was working in the group home. It's good times, man. You eat a lot of dirt and exhaust.
Yeah. So constrained writing. You got some more on that?
I don't know. It's just I'm running into the same thing. There's these weird projects people do, but I mean,
like collaborative projects or?
Yeah, no showstoppers or anything. Have you heard of Exquisite Corpse?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is that? It's a technique for writing, but what is it?
Yeah, it's a surrealist thing. Once again, it's one of these weird things, and it depends on where you look, where you get your information, because some say it's
what
just
is it? El Cripto. There's a Spanish for it, right? El
Cripto
and Cripto.
Yeah, I don't know.
Exquisito. Okay, go ahead.
But it's basically you take a piece of paper, you fold it like four times or however many times there are people in. It's like this disconnected writing thing, and then when everyone's done, no one knows what the other person has written before them, and then when you're done, you open it up. And,
oh, you fold the paper, right? Yeah,
yeah, yeah. But I did it. I did it. I took it literally. When I was teaching a poetry class, I got one of those giant end rolls of old newspaper you can buy for like $10 a pound. Cut it out like to be about 7 feet long, had one of my students lay down on it, and we traced his body. And then I would draw lines all over it, and I would just pick random parts of speech and write underneath the lines. And then students would draw like adverb number one. So they would come up with an adverb, and then we plugged it all in the exquisite corpse and hung it on the wall. It was kind of cool. It was actually really fun.
Mad Libs are sort of like the party game version of that.
Yep.
I don't know if people here know what people hear. People here in Radioland probably know, because people in Radioland are older than most people listening to. People in Radioland are our age or older. People listening on podcasts usually are our age or younger. Mad Libs were books. Well, it's something that was in Mad Magazine, and it was like, you know, they made books of this too, and it was, you'd get a book, and it would say, you know, it would have a sentence and blanks, and it would say, like, under the blank, it would say noun, verb, place, part of the body, you know. So it would say, like, blank, exclamation, he said, adverb, as he jumped in his convertible, noun, and drove off with his adjective wife. And, you know, you ask someone in the room to give you an exclamation, an adverb, a noun, and an adjective without telling them what the sentence is, and they fill it in. And, you know, then, ouch, he said stupidly as he jumped into his convertible cat and drove off with his brave wife. And it's funny. And this is what people used to do before there was the internet and 10,000 channels, 10 million channels on YouTube. It was fun. I used to do them. They were mildly amusing. There's actually a game. There's a card game that's kind of a version of that. It's called Cards Against Humanity. Have you ever heard of that?
Never heard of it.
It's very popular, and it's a, you know, you could buy card decks of it, and it's a party game, and it's things like that. But you take, you don't fill in the word yourself. You have black cards and white cards. The white cards, black cards are the challenge, and the white card are results. And you know, and they're always like really dark, but funny and hilariously dark. You'd probably dig it. It's called like, you know, it's named after the phrase "crimes against humanity." You know, a former Freedom Fiends co-host, this guy Jim Jesus, made a deck that was called, made several decks that actually sold a bunch. He did they were called Libertarians Against Humanity, and Cards Against Humanity lets people use the name and create their own decks. And I helped him with the first couple a lot. The first one especially, like, did a lot of proofreading, wrote, you know, probably 5% of them, and just helped with graphic design. I mean, he did most of it, but I helped. I mastered it. I made it pop. You know, he created it, and then I put the Michael Dean sheen on the top of it and made it better. And it was really popular. He sold, I mean, and he was like getting the decks made in China, and it took like 4 months to get them shipped, but they were really cheap and they were good. And you know, he raised like, he tried to raise like $700 on Kickstarter to make the first one, and ended up making four or five times that. And you know, the way it worked was, he didn't pocket any of it. He probably bought himself a few burritos, you know, while making them. That's how Kickstarter works, if you're lucky. But you know, like, everybody who, you know, who contributed over $20 on the first one got a deck, and then got to help write one on the second deck. And
oh, cool.
Yeah, it was. You know, I mean, I would do that with us, but I don't know. We don't really have much expenses except stickers. And I just buy stickers. I'm spending like $100 on stickers and like $100 a month on shipping, just to send stickers out to everybody to get them around the world. And I'm happy to do it. You know, it's like, what else am I going to do with that? Buy cat toys? I don't know. But hashtag please donate. Send cash. Yeah. Oh, but I have a Patreon. You know what? I got to do something real quick here. Well, you think of something else. So,
yep.
So Patreon is the site I use. Like, Kickstarter is when you're trying to raise money for a single thing. Patreon is raising money ongoing. Like, I have a Patreon. It's patreon.com/fiend, Foxtrot Echo, Echo November. And you can go there and donate as little as $3 a month. And you get extra stuff. You get occasional extra this or that. I have 23 patrons. I get $165 a month. It's about $155 after Patreon and PayPal take their cut. And I always put it back into art. You know, I don't pocket any of this. It's just
nice.
It helps me not lose money as much on this. I still lose money on some of the art, but yeah. Oh, got one thing to mention. This is the last week of the of our paid ad thing, of the ad buy. Of my friend's app, Cell411. You should check out Cell411. Get it free on for either of the big kind of phones, iPhone or Android phone, on the respective places you get apps for that. Cell411 is an app that allows you to set up pre-existing cells of friends or family that you'd rather have come to you in an emergency than calling 911 and hoping for the best. And it sends your people in your cell your location and gives them turn-by-turn directions. And it also, you can film video and audio with it, and it cannot be destroyed because it's uploaded live to the Cell411 servers, where it's kept for a week or two, and you can download it later. So, you know, if someone's attacking you, or you're getting a wrongful arrest or whatever, or there's bullies, you can film them. And even if they take your phone away and destroy it, you've got the footage saved up until the point that they take it from you. So Cell411, get Cell411. And Virgil, thanks a lot for helping out the show the past year. It's really helped defer everything, and I love mutually beneficial things of the free market, of people helping people, and that's what Cell411 does, and Virgil's a great guy, and now he's got copper gutters. I saw the pictures today of his new copper gutters. You ever seen copper gutters? They're amazing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Premium, man.
Yeah. Yeah, for his Satoshi Estates. That's what he calls his house, after the guy who created Bitcoin, the people or person, no one knows who they are, Satoshi Nakamoto. Do you know that? Do you know Bitcoin was created by an anonymous person? No one knows who it was. Yeah, there's like theories of four or five, you know, computer scientists it might be, but no one knows. Yep.
Look for the copper gutters.
Yes. He is Satoshi. No, he's not Satoshi. I think Satoshi's dead because the original Bitcoin that was mined, you know, the original blocks that were mined, are worth like $50 million and they've never moved. Like with Bitcoin, you can see... You can't see who makes the transactions, but you can see like this address moved to this address on the public ledger. Mm-hmm. And the first blocks of Bitcoin have never moved. So, you know.
Oh.
So I think it's this one guy that died, actually. Yeah. I have theories. Yeah, but it's not Virgil. Although he called his home Satoshi Estates, that he has a big gate that says that. But yeah, I think it's Hal Finney. Hal Finney, who died of ALS, is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, he died of that. And his after he died, like, people tried to hijack his family, like, because they thought he had Bitcoin. He was definitely the second person to have Bitcoin. Like, it's public fact that Satoshi Nakamoto sent Hal Finney a Bitcoin transaction as a test in 2009. But I think it was Hal Finney's computer A sending to computer B in the same room. Yep.
Guess we'll never know.
Yep. Constrained language, constrained currency. Yeah, that's the thing about a lot of one reason. So there's a couple reasons that cryptocurrencies are useful and different than other money. One is that with most of them, there's a limited amount. Like there's 18 million or something Bitcoin. There'd never be more than that of actual Bitcoin. There's other variations of Bitcoin, but that particular blockchain, there's a limited amount. And that's a problem with fiat money, with government created money. There's an unlimited amount, you know, which is why the computer that cost, you know, the thing that cost $4,000, the synthesizer $4,000 in 1982, that the buying power would now be, you know, four times that. And that's from devaluing the money by printing more, you know.
Right.
And that's how governments respond to governments cannot create money. They don't really have any ethically created money. They either print it, borrow it, or tax it from other people. You know, they don't really create it. I mean, they don't earn it. Mm-hmm. So fiat money, which is, you know, fiat means because of decree. So fiat money, there's a few different meanings of fiat money, but fiat money generally means money created by governments that has an unlimited supply and they could just print more if they want to. That's a huge problem with it, is it could be devalued by printing more. And it is. And it's, right. You know, you're not only taxed when you pay taxes, but you're taxed over time by devaluing the money, you know. So that's a problem with it. But with Bitcoin, there's a limited amount. And it's not even all created yet. It's created by mining, which is basically using ever more powerful computers to just sit there and churn out numbers and solve problems.
Huh.
Yeah. But and Bitcoin is pseudo-anonymous, which means it's anonymous of who's actually using it, but every transaction is recorded publicly. It's kind of a weird thing. It's kind of cool. But there are actually cryptocurrencies now that are completely anonymous if used correctly. Like that other one. Yeah. Oh, the other one. Oh, speaking of constrained language. Yeah. Monero. There's one called Monero. Monero is the word money in what's that? That synthetic language that was supposed to unite the world that was invented by communists.
Oh, yeah.
I'll look up Monero.
I can't think of it.
Yeah. Monero, cryptocurrency, the name. Esperanto. Let's talk about Esperanto while we're talking about constrained language. Yep.
So didn't Sting do something with that?
Did I tell you that? Or did you read that somewhere else?
No. I don't know. I think so.
Yeah,
I don't know where I got it.
Sting, in a lot of his songs, said EO, like EO.
Right, that's it. EO. Yeah.
And that was, I've Googled this since, and I can't find it anywhere, but it's supposedly, I was told, I think I read in a Rolling Stone interview when the police were hitting it big in the 80s, early 80s, that Esperanto means like peace and universal, or EO means peace and universal brotherhood in Esperanto. Yeah.
I think I heard something similar to that. Yeah. I don't know where.
Yep.
I don't think it took off.
Yeah, it didn't. It's got it's got a couple million speakers in the world, but it's got about a thousand native speakers, which are people that were taught by their parents, tortured by their parents into speaking this. It was supposed to unite the world, and it's a good idea. But it doesn't really take into account nationalism and comfortability. I was going to say laziness, but not really late. But the comfortability people have with their language, you know.
Right.
I was open-minded. I tried to learn German before my band went to Germany in 1990. Like, I went to the library. Mm-hmm. This is before the web. So I went to the library and got, you know, cassette tapes for children. Like, all the lessons were like, you know, Bill is walked into his English class. Hello, Bill. And then you hear like a bunch of kids saying in German, hello, Bill. You know, oh, we got a caller.
Yeah, sorry, the switchboard just lit up.
Hi, this is Hank Rollins calling from Billingsworth, Montana, and I don't like what you said on your show number 1004 of July 19th, 2004. Do you recall what you said, Phil?
Okay.
Huh?
I actually used to do that. I have friends that have actual call-in shows like Free Talk Live. I used to call in and pretend to be someone else and speak very contrary to what I'd actually say. You know?
Nice.
What is that sound?
There's another call coming through. Wow. This is my ringtone, man.
That's us. That's us music. Yeah. Yeah, Esperanto, the guy who invented Esperanto was killed by Hitler, which I'm not down with that. I mean, Esperanto's a bad idea, but not bad enough to kill the guy. But yeah, it was controversial because Hitler was like, all is for Germany. Germany is all. I am Germany. I am all. You know, he wanted one world, but he wanted it German, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, he killed the guy that made it. Not cool, Hitler. Wow. Not cool. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, I think you just should have banished the guy to, well, really, I think he lost anyway because he invented a language that's supposed to catch on and it did not. And, you know, I'm sure that there are people who think that Esperanto should be required by law, by fiat, which would mean using government guns to force people to speak it. That's what you have. I mean, I think it's ridiculous. I've kind of mixed feelings about multiculturalism. Like, I like the free flow of information and ideas. I don't like the idea of forced, like having a national language by law. But then again, I'm not that. Oh, I don't want to get into immigration. But so there's a saying that I really like, Bill Bryson. I learned this from one of his books. The saying is the difference. You know what the difference between a language and a dialect is?
Well, dialect is like localized, right? It's on a smaller scale.
Yeah, it can be. It depends. There's languages that have less speakers than some dialects. But his joke is a language is a dialect with an army.
I like it.
I like it. It's evil, but it's true. It really is true.
Well,
you know, I mean, think about it.
The
like
dark side.
The official language of Ireland is Gaelic, but only 3% of Ireland can speak Gaelic. But I've been to Ireland. I can confirm this. Signs everywhere are in English and Gaelic. Gaelic's a wild language, man. You ever seen it? Words are really long, like 30, 35 letters sometimes, and they have a lot of
diacritical. Yeah, I just picked up a book at the dump. Yeah.
Diacritical marks. In the dump? You go dump diving for books?
Nah, it's cool. There's a book exchange at the transfer station right around the corner from me. So I came home with a book on orchids, this thing about Celtic folklore, and Chinese art table, you know, coffee table book.
Ah, man. We got it. That's going to make it
good,
in this
good
new
stuff.
It's going to make it into the new record, I think. Is it one of those?
So here.
Is it one of those libraries that's like a little box on the street? They have those here.
No,
you've
this
seen
is
those?
Actually,
have you seen those?
It's yeah. Like a, oh yeah, they're all
a
over
book,
the place.
Take a book.
Cool.
I love it. I love that.
But they always have romance novels, though.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people read. I've thought about going and putting my books in them, but I don't know. I kind of want to be anonymous and not have my neighbors know that I write books, because then the newspaper will want to talk to me and then people know who I am. I'd rather be just a voice on the radio that they don't know I actually live four doors down from them. They think I'm, you know, in Cleveland.
That's cool.
Talking on the radio in a studio in Cleveland. Okay, what were you going to say? You got a book and what happened?
So I was just going to describe the scene. So it's like, on one side is where you throw all your returnables and, you know, your cardboard and separate everything. And then directly across that's just these bunch of shelves, man. And people, you can always tell when teachers retire because there's a ton of like you know, teaching theory books and
outdated
stuff.
Outdated teaching books. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. And then, you know, people are dumping entire collections of encyclopedias. I grab them all the time. Just as a matter of fact, I have one sitting in my classroom just as a novelty, if nothing else. But so I'm thinking this could be a poem for a new album. So an orchid, a Chinese artist, and a, I don't know, some Gaelic guy walk into a bar. What do you think, man? Has it got possibilities?
Sure. Okay, yeah, I like taking other forms of low-level literature like a two guys walking into a bar joke and making something out of it. There's I found a couple other forms of constrained writing that are worth mentioning. Well, there's one called attempto-controlled English, which sounds really fascist to me. It sounds like we are attemptoing to control your English, but it's a controlled natural language. It's there are actually several controlled languages, constrained languages that are made to be human readable as well as machine readable. Like they have rules to make them easier for computers to understand them. Yeah. Wow. And then there's Twitterature, which is literature for Twitter that has to be under 140 characters.
Right. Yeah, that's definitely constrained.
But it's actually, they've raised the character limit on a tweet to 280 character. I like that they raised it. It was 140. It was an interesting constraint. It was an interesting idea for a website, and it was frustrating. A lot of times people would kind of work around it. Like there's software where you could put in, 1,000 words of text and it'll make it, break it up into tweets for you and say like 1 of 8, 2 of 8, 3 of 8. And then I've seen people just like take a screenshot of a bunch of text and post that. But so Twitter rolled out the raise of 140 characters to 280 characters. Like they rolled it out to like 5% of Twitter before they rolled it out to everybody. And I think it was random, but I was one of the people that got it. And all of a sudden I was tweeting longer tweets, and all my friends and all the followers I have on Twitter were like really envious. Like, what did you do to be special? And I just kind of did a rock and roll literature swindle and just said nothing. Like, oh, I'm just that cool. But it was actually supposedly random. So another one, 6-word memoirs. That's an interesting form of writing. Let's find some. Okay, here are some examples for 6-word memoirs. Facebook has ruined my entire life.
Mm-hmm.
This one was probably written before the current president, but it's Nixon childhood, Reagan teenager, hope finally. It's probably an Obama licker. I mean, lover. Obama licker. Yeah. Let's see. Here's one. I like this one. Living in existential vacuum. It sucks. You know, I got in an argument with somebody on the internet. I like doing internet on the radio. I told you about it before the show. I'm not going to bring up the topics, but I blow my nose. It happens. People do it. So
it happens.
So some guy was complaining at me about something and being what they call a soy boy. You heard the term soy boy?
No, it's a new one to me.
Can you guess what it is?
Kind of like a tree hugger type thing. Is that what you think?
And they're not necessarily hippies, though. But, soy boys are like really sensitive and feel the pain of the world and blah, blah, blah. And this guy was being a soy boy at me, and I was kind of making fun of him about it. I mean, I don't go out of my way to find people and make them feel bad. I only do it in self-defense, if they come at me with something first. And this guy was a soy boy. And I went and looked him up and found the record he'd made, and I started quoting his song titles at him. And one of them was like, and putting him in quotes, just responding to him with him. Like one of them was like, how could my life get any worse? I was just like, of course you have a song called that, And one was called like, I'm so lonely. And I just kept quoting those at him. Yeah.
What was his reaction?
Blocking me.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying he's a, puss cat for blocking me. I block people. But I only block people, I only do things like that when people come at me. I don't go out of my way. I'm not, as they say, an edgelord. You heard that one? That's a good word.
No, never heard that one either.
Yeah, it's griefers. People that like to go for as wide of an audience as possible and irritate people on the internet because they get a rise out of it. That's sadism. Oh, like I said on the last record, I don't want to hurt people unless they deserve it. Yeah.
Soy what song boys. Was that? I'm trying to think.
I don't know. Kind of all runs together. We have about 95 songs now. I need to update the app, and I'm going to do something I've never done, too. You might actually dig this. I'm going to put out, for this record, I'm going to put out a zip file. We put out the whole record as one MP3. Right. I'm going to put out the whole record as individual song MP3s, like a zip file of 12 MP3s or whatever. Because on some people's phones, that might play better, too. Like some phones have trouble. Do you have trouble when you play the whole file of like if you pause it goes back to the beginning?
Yeah.
I do have so that. You won't have that problem with this. But they'll be numbered with 0001, 0002, 0003. So they'll play in order if you put them all out at once. With a little bit of a like a you know, quarter second space between each one. So it'll break the flow up a little bit, but I'm going to cut them out of the long file, so it'll still have the transitions. I didn't do as much I didn't do any transitions on this record. Nothing flowed into the next record. Did you notice that? But they all went bam, one song into the next, so that it still sounded like a piece.
Yeah. You talked about that.
In the record. It was meta. That's called meta when you self-referential your references and stuff. I'd be smart, man, dude. You know, one of our co-hosts is in Hawaii getting pounded. I think it's over, but you know about that in Hawaii?
Yeah, I have to try to get a hold of my friend. He lives on the Big Island, and I think that's where a lot of the damage was.
Holy wow. Yeah. 31 inches of rain in 24 hours. That's unreal.
Ridiculous. That's biblical.
I mean, an inch of rain, you know, in 8 hours is major. It caused flooding.
Right.
But holy wow. Man, that is biblical. 31. This car is covered with it, man. After the volcano, which is still going on, the volcano erupted, like had eruptions again as this hurricane was headed toward them.
Oh man.
Yeah, you know,
what a mess.
I really think you and I moved the best places in the country.
I think we're going to be okay, man.
I think we're going to be okay unless Yellowstone. Unless Yellowstone super volcano erupts, and then that's not just going to be my problem. That's going to be your problem too. In Maine.
Right. I mean,
if that thing erupts, it's going to be like a world-changing event.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'll block out the sun.
Yeah. Block out the sun and then the worms. Mm. Yeah.
And then the worms. Bring on the worms.
Bring on the worms. So I remember the thing that I forgot to say that my producer said at the beginning of the show that I talked about and never finished was I went to my otolaryngologist, my ear, nose, and throat doctor the other day, who I've been seeing regularly for 2 years now. They drilled the hole in my ear. So the hole has filled up. Has grown over. The tube was sitting in my ear, stuck with a little earwax outside the grown over healed eardrum, and I'm all good. Like, I'm fixed. It worked. And I can hear better now. And my hearing tests this time said my hearing has vastly improved since last few times. I mean, it's still not great, and I still have tinnitus, and I still, you know, the sound of running water hurts my ears because I'm just that sensitive. I'm a soy boy. No, it's from like abusing them with rock and roll for years. But yeah, so the good news is my ears are better. Woohoo! Yeah, so that happened.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Really?
Yep.
That's pretty cool.
Yep.
Wow.
Waiting for the worms. All right, brother. It's been a good show or two. You got anything else?
No, man. Just as always, it's been a pleasure.
Yeah, man. Been very much a pleasure. Worms.
Worms.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've run websites since 1996 and have used over a dozen web hosts in that time. AgoristHosting.com is the only one that hasn't broken my heart. Agorist Hosting's uptime and service is stellar, and their DDoS mitigation is the best I've seen. That's important because if you tell the truth in this world, you'll ruffle feathers. And some people will try dirty tricks to silence your voice. No matter what the haters hit us with, Agorist Hosting keeps our websites online. If you have a mission-critical commercial presence or a world-changing activism site, you cannot tolerate any skullduggery. So go with agoristhosting.com. Have a WordPress or blog site, but you're not satisfied with performance or uptime? Or just want raw hosting? Want to pay with Bitcoin? Agorist Hosting specializes in high-performance hosting with personalized service. Go to agoristhosting.com and click on the button that says Get Hosted. That's agoristhosting.com. The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Hey, I saw your t-shirt from across the room. That's pretty cool.
Thanks. I looked all over for t-shirts with designs and sayings that define my unique taste, and I finally found it.
Who makes them?
Wormshirts.com.
Wormshirts.com?
Yeah, Wormshirts.com.
That's weird. Why'd they call it Wormshirts.com?
Probably because Wormshirts.com is easy to remember. Worm, like the critter that crawls on the ground, and shirts, like what they are, t-shirts.
Wormshirts.com.
Cool.
cool. Do they make them for women?
Yeah, they have men's, women's, and children's styles, a bunch of colors, and all sizes, and they're quality cotton shirts.
I'll look up warmshirts.com right now on my phone and check it out. Wow, they have lots of designs. I've never seen any shirts like these.
Yeah, they're pretty cool.
Hey, let's get out of here. We'll go over to my place and I'll order some shirts on warmshirts.com. Then when they arrive, I'll try them on for you.
Worms!
That's wormshirts.com.